Hi guys, and welcome to episode 6 of the Breadwinners podcast. I'm your host, Pori Kilfordy. This business podcast looks into the lives of current entrepreneurs and business owners on how they've navigated their way to being the best they can be and what makes them tick. I look into their highs, their lows of their journey, and what helpful tips they can give. This week, my special guest is Ronan O'Brien, CEO of Satori Results, a clever entrepreneur who set up his first company as a bet and has turned it into one of Ireland's most famous online fancy dress stores, thecostumeshop.ie. From that success, he's had various online shops to his business. Ronan also was a finalist on the EY Entrepreneur of the Year back in 2012 and also currently sits on the EY Alumni Board. Let's get into episode 6 of the Breadwinner podcast.
How are you, Ronan? And thank you for joining us on Breadwinner's podcast. And suppose, like everyone else, first of all, your expertise is in e-commerce, digital presence, and suppose you've seen a good spike in your business over COVID-19, I'm predicting.
So I have a couple of different businesses, and some of them absolutely obliterated, and others have just kind of done really, really well. So it really depends. Like there are no events going on. So I own a company called buytrophies.ie, and no one's having events. So, you know, literally tumbleweed going on in that business. But we've moved staff over to work in the mobilityshop.ie, and we do a lot of medical equipment. And to a certain extent, we do a lot of PPE now. A lot more than we used to. So it's very interesting because I'm seeing both sides of it. I'm seeing, you know, some businesses really struggle, and fortunately, because we're a group structure, we haven't had to let anyone go within Satori. So I was lucky to have the choice of businesses that I wasn't just focused on one.
And Ronan, suppose out of elements like this that has come very unprecedented, has that brought out new traits in you, do you think, that you probably haven't discovered before?
I think we've been fortunate in terms of, like, there's been several major pivots in the way we do business. Obviously, you know, remote working for a lot of the admin staff and customer support to try to reduce the chances. And I think I've been really impressed with myself and the team in the way that we've been able to react and build new structures around how we work day to day. But it is a big shock. I mean, we've been through a recession before. We're 11 years old. So we started at the kind of the 2007 mark and went head first into a recession. And we managed to do quite strongly out of that. I'm, you know, aware that we're now heading into the second major recession. I think it's going to be a lot steeper than the first. But we will adjust. E-commerce is fortunate in terms of, one, we had to stay open because we're emergency work with the PPE and with medical supplies. Within that business, the mobility shop. So we still have business going, and we were able to keep everyone employed, and we were able to keep the business ticking over. But we had to show that we were serious about being in the game rather than, there's a few other people that could have taken the choice to step back and said, look, we'll take the time off with the family. We'll take the 70% and we won't go and risk, you know, the entire war chest on developing new products and bringing new products in to get onto the front line of the fight.
Interesting time. Ronan, we take entrepreneurs on to the Breadwinners podcast, have a good chat, warts and all, with them about how they started and what really sprung them into life. And you have a really interesting story. Maybe we might start with that.
Yeah, well, I suppose from very early years, I was dyslexic and therefore considered dumb in school by the teachers. And it's very clear that dyslexia doesn't mean you're dumb. It just means you're slower to write things to paper. So your homework would take longer and be shorter, and you don't learn the traditional way. So I was struggling in school. I'd like to think I was relatively smart, but I spent most of my time thinking about, you know, what's the fewest amount of words you could use to say a sentence in writing, whilst on the flip side talking my mouth off all the time. So, you know, I grew up with that way. I managed to kind of blag my way almost into college, where I got a degree in business. And then I started several businesses. The costume shop was the first of the Satori businesses that we started. And I'd been a DJ up to that point, which was, you know, a fantastic hobby that I turned into quite a successful money generating kind of hobby, because I was on radio 6 to 7 days a week. We were both radio presenters from a very young age, Borg. And with that, then I was into the kind of the dance music scene. So I was DJing in nightclubs and getting, you know, 8 to 10 gigs a week, which meant you're doing the early half of one nightclub and then rushing to the next club in order to do the later set. So I was very privileged to be there. I had all the kind of the perks, the agents, the bits that go along with that lifestyle. And it is a very difficult lifestyle because it's late nights all the time, very unsocial hours. You know, to be the top of your game, you kind of have to give up your entire weekends every weekend. And, you know, if you're doing every night during the week as well. And so it was a fantastic time, but I did kind of grow out of it. But through that, and I think business is like a life. It's a life of its own. It's a journey. So through the DJing, I wanted to get costumes for an event we were playing at, and we wanted to kind of work with the promoters to make it a big deal. And we couldn't get costumes in Ireland. So myself and a friend of mine said, look, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here. And I'd started a few other businesses within the telecom sector at the time. And he said, look, you know, we should do this. So we didn't have a business plan. I mean, it was literally done for a bet. And it was that kind of bet you can't do it. I was like, look, I've got a full-time job. I've got, you know, full-time night gig every night. So I don't have much time, but, you know, we took on the bet to do it. And I think the one thing that really shows kind of the difference between entrepreneurs and kind of wannabes or people that would love to be an entrepreneur, but they're just not willing to go through the pain and do it, was that when it came to the bank holiday weekend before our first Halloween, the partner said, look, I can't do this. I've been working 7 days a week, you know, not sleeping some nights, which is kind of normal during the startup phase. And he said, look, I'm taking the bank holiday weekend off. And I said, like, you can't. It's the weekend before Halloween. Like, this is the busy time. And so he said, look, I'm not really into this. I want to walk away. And I was like, walk away and what? There's nothing but debt in the business. Like, we're only 4 weeks old. And we'd done an awful lot of work trying to get the business, like sourcing the stock, and his job was the IT department. I wasn't very technical at the time. And he hadn't been able to jig up the website. Now, we're going back quite a few years to 2007, and he hadn't been able to integrate the website for payments. So there was no Stripe back in the day. There was no kind of easy integrations. E-commerce wasn't that well known, compared to the way it's a staple now. So anyway, he decided that he was going to walk away, and in order to stay friends, I said, look, I'll, you know, take your equity in exchange for assuming your debt, and, you know, we'll stay on talking terms, which we did. And we're good friends now. He's a successful guy in his own right. And I'm delighted for that. But yeah, so he went on, and, we kind of got through the first Halloween, and, you know, it was reasonable, but, you know, we ended up not being cash positive from it. So what I mean by that is there was a lot of, you know, people would buy a size small and then say, actually, I need a medium. So they'd return the size small and get the size medium. But we'd end up then with two size smalls. And so all of our profit was tied up in stock, but we actually had to get cash to pay the VAT and the duty. So we had to borrow money to pay the taxes on our so-called profit, but the profit wasn't cash, it was stock. So, you know, financially, it did not work out. But I had all this stock sitting down in the, I suppose you could kind of call it the home office, the garden shed almost, that I was working from. And I had a full-time job during the day. So I was working 9 to 5. During my lunch hour, I'd get all the parcels that I packed the night before, and I'd queue up in the post office, and they weren't very happy because I'd have maybe 40 or 50 or 80 parcels, and it would take them a long time, and I'd be causing delays for everyone else. But I had to do it during my lunch hour because I needed to get back, you know, at 2 o'clock to finish my shift, you know, which finished at 5:30. Then I came back, packed more boxes, did a little work on the website, headed out to the nightclubs till, you know, for 9:30, 10 o'clock to set up, and then work till 3 or 4 in the morning and come home, and genuinely would then develop the website until 6 in the morning, get an hour of sleep and head into work. So, you know, when you can do that when you're young, when you're in your 20s and you're used to that kind of lifestyle, you can get by with very little sleep. And the way I always compare that, because people think, no, you couldn't have done that. It's like if you're a single mom, you know, or you've got a young kid. When the kid cries, you go to it. It doesn't matter how tired you are. So you just get on with it. And you know that there might be light at the end of the tunnel, but the tunnel can be very far away. So so that's how we kind of got through the first season. And I was delighted when it was over. you know, obviously started the business because I love Halloween and I'm really excited about the whole, you know, creating fun for the sake of it. But I was so tired I didn't get to go out that Halloween. And I was like, the whole point was, you know, we had, obviously I had to work and I went out and DJed, but I'd hoped to kind of go out to a party myself. And I was just like, look, after my set at 12 o'clock, I normally have gone on to do another set. Or in that case, I was taking my night to go out clubbing and I just went home to bed. I kind of thought, well, the whole point was to be, you know, front and center, enjoying myself. And the net result was that I didn't. So I wasn't sure if we were going to continue, but we had stock. And I say the royal we, because it was just me at that stage. And to save money, because as I mentioned before, cash was tight. Everything was bought on credit cards. I was doing the deliveries, you know, on Saturday and Sundays, if I could save a few quid on postage. So it was that kind of raw and basic and not, you know, structured business, no investment, no bank loans, nothing like that, just credit card debt. And so obviously got a bit of rest after Halloween. And then I got a call from the National Concert Hall and they said, look, we got some costumes from you over Halloween. We were delighted, but you haven't updated the website. And I said, that's true. Tell me more. And they said, well, look, when are you going to get the website up and running? Because we need to get our Christmas costumes organized. And like, we're delighted that we found you in the first place, but our Christmas panto is going to start early. So, you know, could you hurry up? And I said, look, you know, the royal we and all the staff are very tired after Halloween, not mentioning that there was a staff of one. I said, but what you could do is if you can send me an email with all the items you want, I'll make sure they're the first up. Now, at that stage, I had no intention of hitting Christmas and being an all-year-round business. It was supposed to be something you'd switch on for 3 weeks and then, you know, move on afterwards. But they sent me a list of, you know, they want Santa hats for all the staff and elf outfits and all the other paraphernalia. And so I said, well, look, there's a market here. I've already got an order. So that kind of started to generate what we can do for Christmas, which then generated to, well, we might make it an all year round business. And then fast forward another 2 or 3 years. And I was looking at the business and saying, look, this is really difficult because it's seasonal. So you're hiring staff, losing money a lot of the time, and then trying to make your money back during a peak period. So we looked at the business and said, look, what is it that we're doing? And we realized that actually it was getting someone to a website, getting their credit card details and put something in a box. And yes, that thing happened to be costumes, but the technical aspects of acquiring the customer and doing the e-commerce was what was actually part. And so we applied that to other businesses and we grew 11 businesses out of that structure.
There was a lot of information there over about 5 minutes to 10 minutes. But Roland, I'm so cautious and looking at the elements of time there that you did that in that period over 3 years to develop a business to nearly go out of it within a week or two after launching it. There had to be a trait in there that you were not going to give up no matter what.
Well, it wasn't necessarily giving up. It was more I set a goal and I felt I'd achieved it. In other words, I wanted costumes for my own, to be able to DJ on. Like, I wanted a big, huge mascot head costumes. And now, in hindsight, and looking back, and you'll know this from your DJing experiences, that would have been way too hot to put headphones inside of, and I would have absolutely toasted myself. Yeah. But in my young, naive state, that's what I wanted. And then I said, well, if we set up this website, we could get everyone else in amazing costumes, and we could tell everyone going to our event, you know, we were involved in pirate radio stations back in the day, so we had plenty of avenues to promote and get the awareness out there and said, look, there is a way. Because back in 2007, and it doesn't seem so long ago now, but it really was black bag territory. Like, if you wanted to dress up, you found old clothes or you found, you know, whatever was in your granddad's war chest, and you made it yourself. So there was no real commercial costumes available to us. And certainly if we're looking for licensed characters and stuff like that, it just didn't exist. So that was what we were trying to achieve. And I felt we'd achieved it. I never really said, well, look, I want to build an e-commerce business, because as I mentioned, I wasn't technical. So that was just something I had to overcome. And back in the day, there wasn't these platforms that made it very easy to, you know, you switch on Shopify and you change a few settings and choose the theme. Like, this was raw HTML code and trying to integrate into, you know, complex financial systems and building security. And because there was no template to do it, we were doing everything for the first time, and we were making our own way of doing it. And then later, as other people came up with these platforms, we realized that our systems were better and that we understood Google Analytics and with the Google, you know, algorithms as to why they ranked. And, you know, we were working with Google very closely, and they'd call us and say, look, why are you ranking in New York for this particular term? And I was able to say, well, you do this and weight it there. So we get a negative weight based on being a .ie domain and being in Ireland. But given that nobody else is after these particular search terms, and you know, we had an incredible success for you know, the size and the scope of our business. And we had growing pains for the first 6-7 years. And growing pains can be as difficult as, you know, a business dying. If you're growing too fast, hypergrowth can put a business under very quickly, because you can lose the run of yourself in terms of, you know, spending the money for VAT before it arrives in, or buying too much of the wrong stock, or being susceptible to credit card fraud and not understanding. And there's so many pitfalls. And I felt like I made every mistake possible, so I knew which ones not to make anymore. And when any time something went right, I amplified that out. And that's where the success came from.
And touching back on your dyslexia, and you described it very basically and simply, do you feel like people look for too much information whenever they are setting up a business? Suppose there's just get up and get on with it. Do you think that was a strength of yours?
So I believe dyslexia is a strength for me. My brain is wired differently, and people that have dyslexia, all of their brains are wired differently. So they're not built to learn the same way the school systems teach. And as a result, the school systems let them down. I mean, in the school I was at, the guidance counselor told us that they had never had a dyslexic kid before. And I was looking at going, but one in 10 people are dyslexic, like, do the math. And they're like, no, you're the first. And I was like, okay, right. Like, if that's your math, then I don't need to, you know, engage with this much more, and kind of tuned out. So, you know, I think from a business point of view, you'll find there's an awful lot of entrepreneurs and leaders that are dyslexic or weren't great in school, and they had to work harder in order to achieve the same results. In some ways, if you're very academic, you can be put on a disadvantage, because it's always going to be the C students that are going to hire the A students. If you come out of college and you're magna cum laude, every single firm is going to come and try to hire you. But they're not going to try to hire the people that are tier two. So I was in the half of the class that made the other half look good, and nobody wanted to hire me because I wasn't, you know, the best of the year. They only wanted the cream of the cream. And I think if you know, the big consultancy companies came and offered me big money at the time, I would have taken it. And then I would have fallen into the trap of, oh, everyone's getting car loans, so I'll go get a car loan. And everyone's buying houses, so I'll get into debt, which then means that you're not able to branch out on your own and take the risks. So from that point of view, I wasn't given those opportunities that the other guys in college were given. Even though, you know, I knew that I was more interested in entrepreneurs and business than any of the people doing the business course in my year. Like, I was the one reading business books because I wanted to, and you know, watching YouTube videos and going along to lectures and, you know, that weren't on my course. So like, I would attend lectures that weren't anything to do with the exams I had. And I'd sometimes get kicked out of them because they're like, look, you don't have this course. And I was like, oh, come on, let me in. Like, but I genuinely wanted to learn. And then when they were talking to me about grades, I didn't care, because I was like, look, I know these guys are not going to hire me. I've done my research. They only hire the top of the class, and I'm not going to perform that exam. So I didn't expect to work for anyone else, and therefore took a different learning curve in college. I wouldn't be upset if my kids were dyslexic. I would just say, your brain works differently. You've got an advantage, because 90% of the people are going to make a different call in the same circumstances as you'd be in.
And just looking at the hunger and desire there, it's a trait that just stands out completely with you. And the desire to figure the coding out, which I'm not going to claim of any experience of, but I've had a couple of friends who've tried to learn it, or, you know, it's not that easy. And for our listeners here who are listening, behind you is a big bookshelf that I notice. So you must do a lot of reading to actually try and even attempt to do that.
Yeah. Well, nowadays, if I was redoing it, I wouldn't do it myself. I would build a team around me. And nowadays, I don't do that aspect of the business. I know enough to oversee the department that does do it. And I'm still the kind of person that's coming up with new, like we rely quite heavily on artificial intelligence automation. So, you know, I'm still the one going, well, why can't we build a machine to do this? Why can't we make an artificial intelligence to make all this decision so I don't have to do it? So if I was spending too much time doing accounts, for example, and helping the accountant, like we had a full-time accountant, and I still felt that my time was spending too much there making sure that it was done right and checking on the work. And it wasn't the fault of the person in question. It was just there was a large volume of stuff. So we built an artificial intelligence that does that. And now I don't spend nearly as much time as I used to. But also we don't have the expense of a highly qualified person to run the account system. It's actually all automated with machine reading, machine learning, and auto data entry. So it's massively reduced the amount of time that I need to do on something that I don't enjoy. But to get to that phase, I had to learn everything about accounting in order to, you know, teach a program to recognize a logo and allocate it to a certain department in accountancy.
Yeah. So let's go back over those couple of things, Ronan. Technology, you knew nothing about. You decided to learn about it. Accountancy, which scares the bejesus out of a lot of people. You went back and decided, I'm going to get my hands on this as well, understand the basics. And, you know, is that something that you think that, well, I have to be successful here, I have to understand a little bit of everything?
No, I think to be successful, you've got to understand a lot of one thing really, really well. Mm. To facilitate your goals, you've got to do the most difficult thing. And if you want to grow, you've got to be out of your comfort zone. So I kind of see, if we could use a metaphor of a balloon floating around in a room. And within the balloon is your circle of competencies. So what you're comfortable with. And all the opportunities are outside of the balloon, and they can bash off the balloon occasionally, and then you'll have an interaction with that opportunity. But most of the time, you need to go out and get it. And the best way to do that is to put more air into the balloon to expand. So expand your knowledge base, expand your network, expand the locations that you spend time in. And as a result, you are a bigger presence in that room. So all the little other balloons and things flying through the air are more likely to touch off you. And when that happens, you'll recognize it. So in order to spend less time doing accountancy, I needed to spend a short amount of time doing an awful lot of it and at the same time build a team. So we still have a bookkeeper, and that bookkeeper will go in and look at all the invoices and say, look, this is the bank reconciliation. Here's what's missing. But the difference is now they might do a couple of hours a month versus a full-time person in the office, which... you know, then needs a lot of personal HR and all the rest. So I think it's about getting outside your comfort zone to make something become within your comfort zone. And the more time you can spend outside your comfort zone, the more rounded and the larger your experience bank is going to be. And then that massively attributes to your success.
Tell us about Ronan. Outside of business, I suppose, the majority of the interview has been consumed about business, but there's a person there, Ronan O'Brien, of course. He is a CEO. He has a lot of those tags and has to know a lot of different things. But what about the person himself outside of business? What makes him tick, and how do you maybe take a step back from the business?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's something I've fully got a hang on, to be honest with you, because I still put long hours in. I've matured over the years. I have kids now. I've got a 12-week-old and a 3-year-old, and that changes your life dramatically. It changes what you want to do. There was a time I was in my early 20s chasing the whole billionaire status, and I know now that's actually not something I want to achieve. I know people that have achieved it, and the sacrifice is just too great, in my opinion, to achieve that in an Irish context. I'm massively into cars, love having my toys in that respect, have a loving wife, and I love spending time with her. We're both foodies, so we would go out. Obviously now that we're having this conversation during the COVID lockdown, so that's a little bit less, but I'd be very into kind of home cooking and eating out and you know, wines as well. So we enjoy ourselves that way. I keep bees, so I've got an apiary with bees. Now you're going to laugh because I'm not even sure if that's a hobby or it's going to be a business, because we're going to, you know, see the opportunity within that and launch a business around that, I think, in a while. But that's because I enjoy it. Like, it's not a pain getting up in the morning. It's something where I kind of go, oh, I wonder if I could create something out of nothing. I wonder if I could add a little bit of value. I love traveling. I spent a lot of time traveling before I had kids, and now I spend a little bit less. But certainly, you know, I'm looking forward to getting back on a few planes once this is all finished with the lockdown as well. So, yeah, I think there is a balance, and you've got to be very strict about your time, you know, making sure that, you know, you prioritize the kids because they're only going to be that age for a little while. And yeah, so I don't know if that really answers the question, because when you don't hate your job, there isn't that defined line between work and personal life. And when you don't always work from an office, I work from home an awful lot, you know, there is no defined on time or off time.
And is that, you know, you've decided to get into to 8-9 different types of businesses there. Okay, you've explained it very simply, like it's just putting a product in a box. But diversification, how have you looked at different markets in the past and said, oh, I think I might like the bees, I might explore that one a little bit more.
Yeah. So I suppose the first thing I should say is, yes, within Zatori that there's 9 different business arms, but I own other businesses and I'm on the board of other companies as well. And part of that is just, I love the startup phase. So I'm really interested in the something to nothing part, the nothing to something part and the early acceleration. And I've got experience with the hyper growth that I think was probably one of the hardest learnings. So reusing those learnings to shortcut other success is fun for me. Mm. So the bees, my wife really wanted bees initially, and we got our beehive for Christmas, and we did the course, and you can join a bee association. And, you know, we like the idea of it's good for pollination, it's important for the environment and things like that. They stung her, and she immediately decided she doesn't like bees anymore. And the bees were asked to leave our home. They're out in the back garden. And so the bees moved to a new location. And I was really surprised because this was supposed to be her hobby. And I kind of said, look, sounds like an awful lot of work. I don't, like, I'm happy to buy the honey, you know, from someone else who does all the work. But I fell in love. I really enjoy doing it. And I love the you know, weekly keeping, you know, going in, checking the hives, making sure they're well. I love harvesting the honey. I like the taste of, you know, knowing the different flowers from the different seasons. And so it's relaxing. And I think one of the things that I like about it, quite like kickboxing, which I used to do, I've given up now, but I used to do a bit of, is when you're doing that, you're not focused on anything. So your mind's not running through work. It's not worrying about, you know, the next deal or thing. You just get a bit of space to yourself, which is rare, I think, in this day and age when, you know, there people usually will have a laptop out and a phone out and Netflix in the background and, you know, so much going on, the kids screaming, making sure one kid isn't, you know, trying to kill himself and the other is, you know, safe and happy, and that there's so much going on. So it's lovely to be able to just do one thing and one thing only. So I think that's where I liked it. And then having got the bees and wanting more and buying more gear, and, you know, we placed an order online with a place, and it was supposed to be next day delivery, and it took 10 days to arrive. And I'm sitting there at the back of a fulfillment center going, well, we could do that a lot better, a lot faster. And we haven't launched that website. It's in beta. We've actually had a few sales already, but we haven't actually put it into motion yet. And we might not do it this year because of the COVID has taken a little bit of a turn towards the focus is kind of, for now, keeping the business alive and growing and making sure that our clients in the nursing homes have absolutely everything they need. So maybe we won't launch that as soon as we planned. We'll definitely put it off a little bit. It'll come someday, and it'll fit nicely in, because if you saw our warehouse, the same shelf might have a radar on it and, you know, a pair of designer jeans, and then a costume, and then a beehive. Like, that's the way it's set up. The AI knows where it is. It works out the fewest amount of steps to take in order to maximize the staff, you know, the staff efficiency, which means then you need less temps during the busy season. Because, you know, during the busy times when it's hard to get employees, you know, on any given morning, you might hire 20 people and only 15 or 12 show up. And yet you've made a promise to your customers that all the orders have to go out and we'll be with them as soon as possible. So, you know, there's a challenge. So we found making optimizing the route much better than throwing manpower at it, because the computers are more reliable and won't let you down. Now, there is a manual element, absolutely. And, you know, that makes the people that are there a lot more valuable, but then also means that you can, you know, do pizza days and treat them better and give them bonuses if they're doing well and if they're exceeding their scores. So it gives them tools to work towards, and so that you can notice them as well if they are high performers.
The big thing about new startups, and I suppose something I'm passionate about, and getting them information and getting them those experienced people who have walked the walk. Due diligence is a massive thing. Any tips, and doing due diligence quickly as well, any tips there for our listeners that they should try and do?
It depends what it is. So if it's a small thing, you're better off going out and failing and learning that way than trying to read every book and, you know, spending loads of money on consultants and delivery. So an example of this was, we have a swimwear company, and we wanted to know, should we be selling sun cream? And logically speaking, what you do when you're running a business is you look for frequency and upside and downside potential. So how can you get someone to order more often? That's frequency. You know, how much can you get someone to buy a larger amount each time? That's a similar kind of opposite frequency. But then upside and downside potential, what do they buy before and what do they buy after? So that helps to build the order size. And we're saying, well, look, it's logical if someone's wearing swimwear that they're likely to be going on holiday. Maybe they want to buy sun cream. But rather than go and do a deal for 10 pallets of sun cream, I just went down to Tesco and I bought two of everything and put them up on the website. And within a week, I realized people do not want to buy their sun cream until they get to the location, because they're going to be carrying, you know, Ryanair carry-on luggage and they don't want lots of liquids. So we didn't have the risk you know, buying pallets of stuff that would go out of date. So the whole test probably cost about €60, and we saved an awful lot of money and time, saying that's a positive failure. We failed forward. So we know that's not the way to go with that business. The traditional one would have been to do lots of market research. People say, oh yes, when I'm going on holidays, I definitely need sun cream. And they would have told you to go and buy it. Then you would have invested heavily in getting a wholesale account and buying their minimum order quantities, which would be pallet loads, and it wouldn't have worked, you know. So I think people can micro test a lot more, but they don't give that credit. So I like that for due diligence. One of the things I regret myself is that I never really had a mentor when I was starting out. I did it all myself. I kind of thought that was the only way to do it. And now I mentor for a few people. But one of the things I do that's very positive for me is I have a group mentoring section. So once every 3 months, myself and a bunch of 10 CEOs meet up for a day, and we go through our businesses and say, look, here's our challenges, here's our problems, here's what's working, here's what's not. And we all focus in on, you know, certain challenges that people are having. And we say, look, this is how we're doing such and such. This is, you know, what I would do in your shoes. And I find that immensely powerful. So a mastermind group like that, if you're starting out, you know, get in with other businesses. If you're, you know, a young entrepreneur, first-time entrepreneur, and I mean that, you could be 60 and be a young entrepreneur. If you're first time doing it, you're young in that respect. You should try to get mentors and talk to people that have experience. Now, this isn't me publicly volunteering to mentor anybody. I certainly don't have capacity at the moment. But, you know, there is a lot of people that have knowledge, and they don't need to have entire knowledge of running a business. They could just be an expert in one particular area. And if that's the area you're struggling with, and a great example I always give in this respect is, there is a guy at Owen Cook who runs the Pallet Network, or used to own the Pallet Network. He's recently exited, but he's still involved. And I was having a problem, and it was there for about 3 months, and I was away on a trip with him. And I said, Owen, can I ask you a question? I've got this one issue and it's, you know, absolutely killing me. And he goes, all right. And I told him, and he goes, yeah, okay, I've had that. Do this. And I mean, what he said was probably 4 lines long. It was a short paragraph at best. And I was like, it can't be that simple. And he goes, no, Ronan, I've done this lots. Do this. And what I'd been working on for 3 months trying to find my way out of, you know, what seems an insurmountable challenge, you know, I just did step one, step two, step three, and it was done. And it was done in the space of a paragraph of good advice. So you really can't knock, you know, talking to people that have been there before, because, you know, you can spend years reinventing the wheel, and if someone's already done it and been down that road, they can tell you which way to go and how to do it. So I think that's really invaluable. Surround yourself with the right people, and then also, you know, at the right time, talk to the right people and ask for advice. And, you know, a lot of people will be willing to go out and have a coffee with you or take a 15-minute phone call if you're very respectful. You know, and say, look, it's only going to take 15 minutes. It's one particular point. Here's what it is. And then, you know, I do a lot of my mentoring when I'm either going out for a bit of exercise, a walk or something, or when I'm traveling to and from work. So it's not really taking time out of my day. But, you know, it's very structured. I need to know what the problem is. You know, it needs to be short. And, you know, it's not just chatting for the sake of. It's, you know, get the value out. If we decide on what to do, don't come back until you're ready to take the next phase and say, I've tried this, I've accomplished this. You know, and that could be 2 months until I talk to someone next, or it could be 2 days later.
Mm. Ron, you don't seem like a man that ever thinks about giving up, but has there been any time throughout your career that you thought?
There's been a few times, to be honest with you. And sometimes giving up can be the right thing. Like, well, we've had one or two businesses that I wouldn't say failed, but they did what's almost worse than failing, and that's they barely survive. And the worst thing you can do as a business person is get a business that's just about ticking over. It's not enough to add, you know, a substantial wage into your pocket, not enough to give you a fair wage, but it's not losing money, so it stays there. So you keep plugging away and investing your time, but it doesn't give you the rewards. So we've had a few of those and shut down. And the right thing to do was to shut them down. We may have a few more in the future where we kind of go, do you know what, you've had your day and I'd rather close you down, even if you're profitable, because I'd rather focus the resources and staff time on something that's, you know, potentially more. The opportunity cost is more if you can go after a different goal, knowing that that business is in an industry that's not growing, for example. I remember in particular we had what I refer to as kind of a Black Friday of my career. In a very negative sense, that we had three major things go wrong, and any one of the things would have knocked you down. But the fact that all three of them came at the same time, it put us 6 feet under. And I really, at that stage, was like, look, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe it's me. I'm just not good enough at running a business. This all happened on my watch. And I've, you know, got to really decide now, do I bother trying to put the effort in to resurrect the business? And that's the way it felt at the time. And I'll tell you that story if you want.
Yeah, no, go ahead, yeah.
So the first thing that happened was on Thursday, we found out we were a business that was selling a lot of designer perfume. And it was around the Halloween time, and we found out that one of the temps had removed all the designer perfume from inside the packages and left all the packages neatly stacked. But, you know, we're talking the big brands here, and they're quite expensive. So there was 15,000 euro worth of stock supposed to be on the shelves and not on the shelves. Now, with our system, we could tell you when the last time someone picked it from and could get a very clear window of who was in the area, etc. So we had the detectives in and we had to say, look, you know, this has happened. We've had this theft. We've investigated. We have to report it. You know, the legal people said, look, the best thing to do is just say, thanks very much for your time. You're no longer required, not press charges. Which, you know, was very difficult because I've given someone a job and they were stealing from me and I took it very personal, which I shouldn't have. But in my naivety, I was like, oh, you know, it must have been a personal attack that they wanted to steal from me. What did I do wrong? So I was in a bit of a bad mood to start off. And then that was the Thursday. And then the Friday, I got a call. We started getting a lot of calls in the office saying that the parcels weren't being delivered. This was the Friday before the weekend. Was it? Yeah, it was the Friday of the bank holiday weekend. So the Monday would have been a bank holiday, and all the kids needed their costumes for the weekend. And suddenly we noticed the call center volumes were going up. And at the time, we had outsourced our call center to a company, and they just threw more bodies at it. And they were saying, look, your calls are up 600%, they're up 900%, we're charging you per minute. They were delighted because they were making an absolute killing on answering all these calls, and the people wouldn't get off the phone going, look, it's supposed to be delivered today, it's not arriving. And they're like, look, it's only midday, don't worry about it. And they're like, no, it should have been here by now. And so we called the courier company and said, look, what's going on? I said, look, stop complaining, it'll be there. And then we tried to get in touch with the rep, and they weren't answering their phone calls. And then I tried to get in touch with the CEO, and he didn't make himself available, although he normally would have answered all my calls considering the size of us as a client. And it turned out that that company had, another company had gone bankrupt, and that company had acquired all their traffic through the courier network, and they couldn't handle the volume. So they forgot to unload a 40-foot container filled with costumes that needed to be delivered before bank holiday weekend. And again, we're going back so many years that there wasn't Saturday deliveries. And all these people were very upset. Now, even though a customer might only have spent 20 or 30 or 40 euro with us, what they were seeing was we were about to make their child cry, and there was no way we were getting off the hook. So they weren't going to hang up the phone. They weren't going to accept. The courier company, even when they called them, they said, no, if we haven't delivered it, it must be someone else's fault. So there was a huge issue around that, and our reputation took a massive beating, because we're only as good as the delivery. And the fact that we did send the product and they could see that the item was scanned and scanned into the depot but not out for delivery the next day, they didn't care. They were like, no, I paid you for the delivery. This is your fault. So what we had said when we eventually found out around 5 o'clock that, look, no, none of the parcels that we had been promising customers all day would be there by the end of the day, we're going to be by there. I said, look, let's get 500 taxis. Let's give them 15 packages each and pay them 10 a package. And we'll just get all the people sorted. And all you need to do is give me 2 staff to open up the depot. I'll get my staff up there. And the CEO just said, no, we're not doing that. Staff are all going home, because he was worried we'd make him pick up the tab. And I was saying, look, I promise you, like, my ethics are quite high here. I will pay this. I just need, even if we lose money on every single order, I just need our business to survive in terms of reputation. So they didn't do that. They didn't send the parcels out. In fact, they tried to deliver the parcels, in November, like after the parties or the weekend after. So they tried to then charge us to return them to us as well. So it got very difficult and very heated. We turned around and said, look, here's the contract. This is the agreement. You were guaranteed delivery. If it wasn't, you had to put in a taxi. But not only did we say we would forego that and pay, but you refused to do it. And they just didn't answer the calls. So we got absolutely black eyed there, the reputation, the online comments, the hatred, the reviews. And we're like, look, I don't know if we can get over this, because if you make someone's child cry, they're never going to try to buy from you again. So that was quite difficult. So, there was a couple of nights, no sleep. And then on the Sunday of that weekend, we got broken into, and a group came in, and they went into the sewers and cut the monitored security system. They angle grinded off a door. They, for some reason, they thought that we were a cash business, and that if we were very busy, then all the cash from the internet would end up in a pile in our office. And that's what they were looking for. And it was an inside job, and that was a bit upsetting for me. And they had tried to rob the CCTV. We actually had a CCTV system in. They robbed the decoy one. So we had video of it all. But anyway, so those three things all happened together. And it was, all within the same period. So we were really, really down in terms of, items have been stolen on both the Thursday and the Sunday. The customers are furious at us. The courier company had then come back and said, not only do we want to charge you for not delivering on time, but we're charging you for the attempted delivery. And if the customers don't accept it, we're going to charge to collect the items and return it. So they were actually going to be quids up, getting double the amount of pay. And so we referred to the contract, and there was a criminal element hired to force payment, and the house got broken into and all this kind of stuff. And the wife wanted to move out of where we lived as a result. So it was a really difficult time, and I felt like, you know, that my work had, you know, impacted my wife, my girlfriend at the time. We had to move house, and, you know, it was all just quite upsetting. And the reason I can say this, it's not liable. I mean, the person actually texts saying, look, such and such is now going to be, you know, in charge of getting our money back. And I was like, I don't owe you the money. And also, you know, really, we're going down that element. So, you know, we wanted to go down the court route and get it dealt with correctly. But anyway, it was just all these things coming together at one particular time. And any one of those you would have been able to get back up from. But when they all came together, and then, you know, those little things like the revenue still went to the VAT on all the money that was stolen, and, you know, because we had a little bit of cash in the till, and it was a small amount. And I was just like, but do you not understand? Like, you're kicking us when you're down. Like, the money is gone. You can't collect it. So we had to borrow money to you know, do the till from that night. But again, you know, we're an internet business. Most of the orders are via the credit cards, thank goodness. So that was a really dark period of my life. You know, I was struggling. I think the staff didn't really understand that, you know, oh, well, we get paid in every week. And, you know, I had one member of staff go, it's been really stressful this week. I want to raise. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And they're like, look, you know, it's been stressful. I think I deserve a raise. Like, and I was going, look, I don't think I'm going to get a wage for 6 months. I don't know if we're going to be here in 2 months. What do you mean you want to wait? Like, do you not understand the repercussions of a bad reputation for us not delivering, and that the customers aren't going to forgive us? And I have to say, I probably didn't give the general public as much credence as I should, because a lot of the customers did actually come back and reorder. And I think what some of them did was say, look, you know, this time I'm going to order 2 or 3 days in advance rather than leave it till the absolute last minute. Because that 40-foot truck that did leave was the orders kind of between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. when the cutoff was 4 p.m. So they said, look, I might order the day before. So the following year, I was relieved when sales were actually quite reasonable, and the customers were having been let down before, were willing to order from us again, but they wanted to order earlier.
And definitely at that time, it was surreal, but is it something that you sat down and you worked out and you said, look, this is the worst case scenario. If we've survived that, we will survive anything. And obviously there comes a lot of leadership there with employees, and probably that was a time that you learned a lot about yourself as well.
Yeah, well, I definitely learned a lot about myself. I think on those periods you do reflect, and you kind of try to work out, you know, look, what did I do right and what did I do wrong? And I think once it settled down and I realized, you know what, like, none of these things, like, it wasn't my fault that somebody robbed from me. It wasn't my fault that, you know, we had a contract in place and I believed in it, but I should have made alternative arrangements and I should have been more forceful. And, you know, I said, look, none of these things were something I've done. We've actually managed to recover. You know, what's the options here? There's no option not to pay our suppliers. You know, we need to, you know, pay all the staff, and the staff still need jobs. So really it was just a case of, look, you know, all we have, even if we were to liquidate, we'd probably be in the negative. So we needed to keep trading just to be able to pay every, you know, debt that we had, and just to keep going and get back up. And you don't get up straight away. You get back on your knees and then you put your hands down and you crawl for a bit, and then you kind of stumble to your feet and you learn to walk again. But you're afraid to run, because we were running so fast at the time that, you know, when you're running and you fall, it's a lot more painful than if you're just walking. So we got a bit humble. But I think we learned a lot from that. I mean, you know, we learned, okay, trust and verify in terms of new staff. You know, well, why would somebody steal? Well, they felt that they wouldn't have got caught. So maybe make it more clear to people how the system works, that, you know, you can't do this. And then we started putting a lot of automation in at that stage. That was the beginning of our, you know, journey down the road of, look, how do we optimize the system so we don't need as many people, which then limits the potential for those type of things to go wrong. And how do we vet the people that are coming in, and what recruitment agency standards should we have? You know, because I think we were just taking loads and loads of bodies because we needed them. But actually now we're an awful lot more fussy about who we will and won't have on premise. And we don't always get that right, but we certainly have a lot more metrics to work out, you know, how things are going and to catch any problems early.
Hmm. Moving on from that, looking at, taking me back to 2012, Ronan, you were on the EY Entrepreneur of the Year finalist panel. No doubt that was a joyous occasion for you, and suppose it was a time where you thought, well, I must be doing something right.
Yeah, it was something I really wanted, to be honest. Like, I aggressively pursued that as a goal, and I'd recommend it to any entrepreneurs listening to this podcast. I assume people that are listening to this are entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs. It is by far the best program and the best network in Ireland for entrepreneurs. I sit on the board of that now. I am on the alumni board. And I'm very active within that community. And I have to say, like, the experience was absolutely incredible. From you know, meeting the other finalists. I remember there was a guy who was a finalist, and he was like, "What do you do?" And I was like, "Oh, I've got this internet, you know, business. It's you know, does retail." And he goes, "Oh, my neighbor does that. He does a lot of internet stuff. You should meet him." And I said, "Oh, cool. Like, where do you live?" And he's like, "Oh, Palo Alto." And I was like, "Who's your neighbor? Or maybe I've heard of him." "Oh, Larry Page." And I was like, "You mean the guy that owns Google?" And he was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Well, thank God you're not in my category." And he goes, "Well, what category are you?" And I said, "Emerging." And he goes, "Oh, me too." And I was like, "Oh my God, like, this guy has 10,000 staff and we're in the same group." And, you know, you can imagine the learnings that you can do from a guy who hangs out with, you know, the heads of Google. So the network is absolutely incredible. And what that program has done for Irish businesses is never really pushed forward, but they really do. It's like pouring rocket fuel on all the alumni and the finalists, because they get that network where they can say, "I've got this problem. Oh, no problem. You know, this person has been through it. That person has sorted it." And if you play the game right, in terms of, you know, you get to know all these different people, you've got, you know, 525 people you can pick up the phone to and ask, you know, a very poignant question in an area that they are the absolute expertise, the experts in the entire world on. So it's an incredibly powerful group.
Ronan, it's been a fascinating hour or so speaking to you. You've covered so much, from highs to lows, to getting on with it, to starting out and just not thinking about it, to really get into having the leverage of your network towards the end. Before I let you go, I ask all my interviewees three top tips they would give to your listeners, either A, starting out a business, or B, in the middle of a business. Three of those tips that you would get them to consider.
So I kind of, the process I work with a business is probably tip number one. So eliminate, automate, delegate, in that order. So if there's a job you're doing that can be eliminated, get rid of it. If it's not core to a competency, automate in terms of bring in artificial intelligence, bring in systems and processes that you can use. And if neither of those things work, then try to delegate it. So become an expert, understand it. And then once you're able to kind of codify that and put steps around it, pass that on and move outside your comfort zone onto something else. That's the best way to grow a business. So that's number one. Be willing to fail. I think too many people in Ireland are terrified of failure. Every time I start a business, even now with my string of other businesses, people tell me, "Well, that's not going to work. Why would you do that?" So, you know, ignore the naysayers, but get out and do there. A lot of people like can try with very little capital, very little risk to set up a business. You know, it doesn't have to be full time. You can do it in the evenings. It doesn't have to take all your abilities. It doesn't have to take all your time. You can say, "Look, I'm going to put 10 hours a week aside. Instead of watching TV, I'm going to start a small business, test the concept." You know, you don't need to leave your job to do it. Get their blessing. They'll be delighted to hear you're being innovative and give it a go. So, like, just massive action is so important, because a lot of people will read books or they'll watch TV or they'll talk about it, but they'll never take any action. And if you don't take the action, like, that's the hardest step. don't worry about telling people your ideas and that they'll rob them, because the chances are you won't take the action, and it's most likely someone else is going to be passionate enough about your idea to take the action for you. So I think action is the key missing component with a lot of businesses and a lot of entrepreneurs. They want to do it, and they know deep down the one thing that can make a massive difference, but it's so far outside their comfort zone that they don't want to take that action. And then the third thing is do something you love, like enjoy it. You're going to spend so much of your time, you know, in work. Why not love your work? You know, if you want to go somewhere specific, be the captain of your own ship. Don't be sitting in the back of the airplane and expect to be able to tell the airplane which way to go. You know, you need to be the pilot for a while. And I think that's really important, to be the pilot of your own life and your own destiny. So those would be my three, I think.
Look, Ronan O'Brien, CEO of Satori, it's been fantastic. Thanks for joining us on the Breadwinners podcast, and continued success with your business. And we've been on just over an hour now. We could chat for 2 hours, but thanks very much.
Thank you.
That's all from today's Breadwinners Business Podcast. We strive to bring you practical business knowledge from entrepreneurs and business owners from all over the world. I hope today's podcast was useful. Please tag me over on our Facebook page at the Breadwinners Podcast. But from myself, Pádraig Hilfirthy, and everyone at the Breadwinners Podcast, thanks for listening.